April 12th, 2023, is the Wild from Pedro Show.
Thank you. more than the empty page. Nothing taunts you more than the words that you can't see.
Pedro Show, happy Wednesday. Started off John Coltrane with Johnny Hodges, okay. Rabbit, right? Many years with Duke Ellington, but this was his own band. And he had a young John Coltrane with him. It was live 1954 in a mellow tone. And then Dan Montgomery with Start Again. Because of those Estonian software engineers and their Skype invention, I got with me all the way from Memphis. But Dan Montgomery. Welcome aboard, Dan.
Hello, Mr. Watt.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I'm curious about your journey through music, so let's go as far back as you can. Please bring your earliest musical memory.
My earliest musical memory is one I don't have, but the rest of my family has, which is that before I could speak, I could sing all the words and the guitar song to Soldier Boy by the Shirelles.
I remember that song.
Yeah. I had two sisters that were 10 and 12 years older than me, so like I'd heard a lot of like doo-wop records,
yeah,
and Asian stuff like that and all when they got married and left them behind.
Yeah. Now, in the pad you grew up in, was there musical instruments?
My brother played guitar. He was a real folky, and still is. He had a guitar, but I wasn't allowed to touch it. We shared a room, but he had friends that I didn't, so when he would go out to play with his friends, I would play his guitar.
You jumped on it, right? Okay.
Yeah, and we had two songbooks in the house. He had a best of Paul Simon complete songbook, which basically had some incredibly intense chord change for every syllable. And I'm like, yeah, with this. And then a Hank Williams songbook. I was like, this I understand. And I took off from there.
You know where those came from? Because to get a copyright in the old days, you had to have something called a lead sheet. So you'd hire,
yes,
a piano man to, like, do a piano version of your tune. Richard Hell told me the best story when he tried to get one for Blank Generation. The piano man asked him to sing for him. And he says, I can't do it. And Richard Hell asked him, why can't you? He says, because you're not singing any notes.
Wow.
So anyway, I don't think that was really guitar music in that book that they were asking you to do any. Yeah.
Probably not. Yeah.
So,
but I had a really intense love of music from as long as I can remember, really.
Let me ask you this. What was the first record you bought with your own money?
First record I bought with my own money, it would have been a 45. It would have probably, it would have been something by the Grassroots. I was really into the Grassroots.
Wow, I remember them. I think Los Angeles Cats.
Sure, yeah. And then, they actually became the first band I ever saw live because...
Oh, wow. Okay. How'd that happen?
They played a half-hour set between two games of a Philadelphia Phillies doubleheader baseball game. And I was like 11 or something. Okay. So it was like my team and my favorite band. It was great.
Talking about the Philadelphia Eagles in the old days, I remember seeing them on TV in the field. Like, you could see the street and shit.
Oh, yeah. It was crazy. I mean, I'm more of a baseball guy than a football guy. It just takes over.
We had a guy from your team, Richie Allen.
Oh, sure.
He ended up on the Dodgers. A really good hitter. Kind of a mean guy, but man, what a that guy could play.
Yeah. But the Eagles was always funny because, we're the team that they started the whole thing of not serving beer after, halfway through the game. And they have, I don't know about the new stadium, but the last stadium, they had a deal where there was a judge that had season tickets. And if you acted up, got drunk and acted up, they put you in a holding cell under the stadium, and in between plays, the judge comes down and sends you right downtown.
Oh, man. Let me ask you about school. Were you in the marching band or the choir, shit like that?
I was in Glee Club when I was in Catholic school before they kicked me out.
Okay.
Not for my singing, but that didn't help either.
Okay, now that guitar stuff that you were doing kind of stealth on the sly when you broke it.
Yeah, I self-taught. I never took a lesson.
Okay, self-taught. And so, like, did you learn off records? Like, listen to records, try to figure it out?
I tried to. I was, I started writing early because I wasn't that good at figuring other people's songs out. And I'd be like, halfway through, I'd be like, this isn't right, but it's not bad.
That's like,
so I was like, I throw it away,
Yeah, right. So you started writing early. That's cool. That's very happening. Yeah. Can you remember the first song that you wrote?
Well, on the new album, Cast Iron Songs and Torch Ballads, there's a song there called Lonesome Train. And that's actually, I wrote that when I was 23. That's like 40 years old, that song now.
Wow.
But I never recorded it until this year, until I had a band that I thought was right for it.
Well, let me ask you about this. After school, but not graduate, like afternoon, do you get into the garage band, the basement band, the bedroom band?
When I was 14, I got kicked out of Catholic school when I was 9.
And what about getting your own guitar?
Yeah, and then I was always around with guitar, and then I started hanging around with a band when I was 13, a local band. I was their roadie. And then we go down to the Jersey Shore and play gigs down there. And for some reason, my parents let me go away and do that. So I was picking up guitar here and there from those guys. And that band broke up. And then one of those guys started another band. And I became the rhythm guitar player in that band when I was 14. That was my first, actual band.
How did you get your first guitar?
How did I get that first guitar? It was really nice, too. It was a Guild.
You must have got an amplifier with it, right?
Yeah, I mean, I had a paper route and just saved up my money. Like, we didn't come from any. We lived.
Jamin Econo wasn't just a slogan, it was a way of life.
Yeah.
Can you remember the first gig you did? What was this band called that you joined as rhythm guitar? You were Tom Fogerty.
Yeah, the band was called Samuel J. Only because I think it was our bass player had some dream that we were playing the Philadelphia Spectrum, which was the big arena at the time. And that was how they announced us, so that became our name. And my first gig, it was playing a dance at a local, it was like a community-sponsored dance. And we were supposed to play one set in between the DJ playing two sets. And then when we got there, it turned out the DJ only could stay for one set, so we had to fake our way through two sets.
That's right.
I learned about jamming that night.
Yes. What was this band called?
Samuel J.
Okay. And that's because of the announcements. See, a lot of sports in your life.
Yeah. For sure, it was huge, yeah.
Now, was it like Tom Fogerty? You know, I love, you know, Creedence, Keep on Chuglin', right? That's one big E7 chord. Was it kind of stuff like that?
My dream goal was always to be the rhythm guitar player in Creedence. You know, it's like, I can hold that down.
You know, he did write him one song.
Yeah.
Walking on the Water. It's Walking on the Water. And get this. You know who covered that song? Richard Hell and the Voidoids. Yeah, on the first record.
I think I just pulled that out recently. I was listening to that. I was like, I forgot all about that being on there.
I asked Richard Hell about that. He said it was Bob Quine's idea.
I was wondering about that.
But it's the only song that Tom wrote, because you understand Tom was the older brother. So, like, the younger brother, there's some progenitor issues going on there.
I was very Shakespearean.
Anyway, there's a little bass solo in there, too. It's on the first album, right?
Yeah.
How long does Samuel J. last for you?
Samuel J. lasted about 2.5 years, but there was a breakup in the middle where a couple of the guys in that band, including myself, we formed an ill-advised R&B band. It was like 14 pieces big with a horn section and all. and we really only knew about four numbers, but our big number was Heat Wave. And we run through our four numbers, and somebody would yell out, did somebody play Heat Wave again? And we'd play that again.
And Heat Wave's like 2 minutes long, right? But
Yeah, our big numbers were that and the theme from SWAT, if you remember that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, like kind of.
Walk-on song. We come on piece by piece, yeah.
Kind of Tom Scott, little alto, sax thing. All those 70s shows, right? Beretta, yeah. On the Sparrow. Keep your eye on the bone marrow. Okay, well, you gave me this one here. If I said it, let me play that, Dan.
who's at his command. Don't let that deal go down until it meets every demand. And when it hands you the contract, boy, you better read each line twice. Don't put your name on the bottom line until it meets your price. You've got to hold out till you get the right price. You've got to hold out till you get the right price. You've got to hold out till you get the right price. You've got to hold out till you get the right price. Well, he's a very bad man. He's the fattest cat. You know he's so staggerly, his needs different hats. But he's hell-bent for leather. You can see he don't care. Oh, he's living the lowlife, but he's so debonair. He's got lions and adders. Boy, is that his command? Before the deal goes down, make sure he makes your demands. And when it hands you the contract, boy, you better read each line twice. And don't put your name on the dotted line until it meets your price. You've got to hold out till you get the right price. You've got to hold out till you get the right price. You've got to hold out. Till you get the right price, you got to hold out. Till you get the right price.
Trip to New York City alone. We're out there at twilight. In a car near Peter. Went for a walk on the Snowy River. Trip to New York City alone. We're out there at twilight. In a car near Peter. Went for a walk. Trip to New York City alone, right there at twilight. On a car near Peter, went for a walk on the Spelling River. Trip to New York. Trip to New York City.
My door is always open just
coming here.
Why for Pedro show. That chunk of music started with Dan Montgomery with If I Said It. And that's right. He meant it, people. After that, brand new from Midwife and Viva Melancholia, Miss America. Brand new out of Italy, Arabia Saudade with Argentina. Diego Lorenzi featuring Thomas Gubbins and Nicholas Lorenzi. Estupido, il sensual. Yeah, you always put those two kinds of words together, right? Ted Kaine, The Right Price, Bombas Prendon, brand new from them, Almost Fell in the River, Anti-Strawberry, with Brian Day. He made me a beautiful string excited for my bass, because them fucking Ebos, that's Guitar World, but they ain't strong enough, people. The space is wrong, too. Fragaria, I guess, version of fragrance. Magic Sword, brand new. They got a big piece, but here's one part of it called The Kindness of a Stranger. 99 Letters with Marai. And finally, Dan Montgomery, come in here.
Yo.
Yeah. That's a. Yeah, he ain't asking people, he's telling. So. Okay, so where do we pick up from the horn section in Heatwave? Many versions of Heatwave.
That band lasted basically a summer, but our big goal was to play the a place called the Pensauken Pool, because I grew up in a town called Pensauken, New Jersey.
Yeah.
And we did, and I met my first girlfriend there, so it seemed like a really successful band in that sense.
Yeah, yeah.
And by the time school started, that band broke up, because the horn players were all in Catholic school, and we were all in public school, so it was never going to work out schedule-wise.
Right, right. So
back together, except we added a keyboard player. And we just, you know, we're doing what we're doing. We're actually just playing, you know, what now everybody calls classic rock, but it was just rock then. You know, it was Bad Company and Grand Funk and things like that, you know. And
there used to be a lot less genre names.
Yeah, it was just radio.
Yeah, and you know, one day I think it's going to – yeah, it's just going to be called music. What about that idea?
Yeah, I recently, a couple years ago, I inherited a record collection from a friend of mine who passed away, a guy from Philadelphia named Peter Stone Brown. He's like one of the great collectors of folk music and one of the first known Dylanologists and stuff.
Yeah.
And he willed me his record collection, which was a really moving thing. But I was shocked when I went to pick it up, and this is like a couple thousand records, there was no genres.
That's heaven for me.
There was just a day, he's like, it's all music. It's just alphabetical, it's all music.
I'm right up that guy's alley.
Yeah, man.
You know, I've been waiting to hear something like that. Because all these other motherfuckers, you'll talk about music, and they'll start bringing out these band names and these names of kind of bins in the chain store and stuff. And I'm like, no, let go of that shit. That's a marketing guy trying to make his job easier.
Yeah. Yeah, I always wanted to have a record store where it's just alphabetical.
Yeah, like an encyclopedia, right? Just fucking that's the way the chips fall. So,
and you would separate the wheat from the chaff from who you wanted in your store pretty quick.
Okay. Smart man, Brother Dan. Now, are you still on rhythm guitar at this point? But you're writing tunes.
Nobody in my band wants to hear them.
That's what I'm going to ask. Is any of the material for the band? No. It's all...
You know, what happened at this point is, I'm starting to write, but this is about 1975 or so.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, I hear Patti Smith and television and stuff like that.
Piss fat.
And I'm like, wow, what's that?
Yeah.
Another guy in the band gets really into... The lead guitar player gets really into fusion. And another guy gets really into... really straight country stuff. And it was like, we just split it apart, you know?
Yeah.
And punk in my neighborhood was not popular. It was.
Mine either, believe me. I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah. And it's funny because where we were is right next to a city called Camden, New Jersey. And
Camden. You know who ended up in Camden? Walt Whitman. I went to his pad.
Yeah, you have the Walt Whitman Poetry Center there. But so you're just 10 minutes from, like, if I crossed my street, I was in Camden. I was at the very end of the town I lived in. And if you leave Camden, you go into Philadelphia.
Across the river, yeah.
And that was where I found places I could do what I wanted to do, because in New Jersey, it was basically all but illegal to play original music. And in Philly, nobody wanted to hear cover bands, like in the city.
Okay.
So I started, you know, and which also meant, you know, you start breaking away from a lot of your friends.
Can I ask if you knew of a club in Philly called the East Side Club?
Oh, yeah, sure.
That's the first pad the Minutemen played.
Yeah, because I saw you guys at City Gardens, I think twice. I know at least once.
But that, I think that's Trenton.
Yeah, it's Trenton. But that's the thing about where I grew up is, if you saw a band in Philly you really liked, the next night they were going to either play in D.C., Trenton, or New York. Everything's an hour and a half away.
Yeah. I'll tell you what was fucked up about those days, though. The interstates didn't really connect between the you'd have to get on surface streets to stay on I-95, like State Road 3 and 6 and shit like this.
Yeah.
Nightmare.
Well, the thing is, being in New Jersey, you get lost. As long as you get on Route 9, you'll eventually end up anywhere you need to be.
9, that's it. That's it. Yeah. Anyway, there's still opportunity for all the hells. It was great to go and play those places, stuff like that. But, okay, when do you get to start playing your own material? When you get your own band?
Yeah, like around 20, I had a band called Small Talk that didn't do much, and it wasn't very good. And I had never been a front man by any means. It was a I wasn't ready for it in a lot of ways, but it was just guys playing in a bar that nobody was paying that much attention to. So it was a good learning experience. And I was building up my songs. And then I took this detour when I got introduced to Ben Vaughn by a mutual friend at a record store. And I went to see his band play, Ben Malcombo, and I loved it. And he was looking for a sound man. And I was like, well, I don't know anything about running sound. He goes, you're the guy I want. Because, well, 1985, right?
Yeah.
And every club sound man is putting gated reverb on every drum.
Yeah, the Duran.
The original Ben Malcombo drum kit was a snare drum, a hi-hat, and a hubcap.
Yes.
And they would still put the gated reverb on the hubcap. It was like, so I was really hired to be reverb police and just turn things off. I just grew from there, you know.
Okay.
Because I didn't know what I was doing, and we were doing it full time, you know, doing it for a living. Right. I kind of put a lot of my stuff aside and was just doing that for about 5 years, and it was really great. It was really fun. And it prepared me for everything. When I picked up my career in earnest, it prepared me up for everything. I would have had to learn a lot slower about how to survive on the road and how to do things.
Sure.
By one other example.
So you did that for about 5 years, and so the next, it's not like a rerun of Small Talk, right? You got all this education. Now you know what to do. So what do you do?
Yeah, I had a band in Philly. The drummer named the band, it wasn't me, called Drugs Before Breakfast. and it was a really good band, kind of like, it was very like Flaming Groovies, kind of early Stones, this kind of thing. And that was the first time it was really 95% all my material, and I was the one up front singing it, and it was really good. And just the usual stuff of, you know, trying to keep a band together, it didn't last, and it folded into a band called Del Pez. And we put out 145 called Hope I Had a Good Time, and right about the time that came out is when I started I had an ill-fated move to California, which ended up with me moving to Memphis, because I met somebody in Memphis along the way, so I went there and stayed there. I went there for a summer and stayed there, and it's been 20 years.
Whoa. You okay? Sorry.
The phone got knocked over, sorry.
Yeah, I was waiting for I've fallen and I can't get up.
No, I'm still good.
Okay. So you're saying there was a mistake in California.
Well, it wasn't a mistake of timing, and my move to California turned out to be a week and a half after 9/11.
Oh, shit.
And while I was sure I had a job there, when I got there, it was out in the California desert, not in the city. Yeah. When I got there, they told me, oh, we put a hiring freeze on a week ago, and I had no work. My car died once I got out there, and I was just kind of stuck in a friend of mine's house out in the desert.
Whoa.
And, you know, I couldn't go anywhere or do anything. And That's where I wrote a lot of my first record. So my first.
That time wasn't wasted.
No. It was like, I got to do something while I'm here. I'm going to go insane. And yeah. It was funny. The only thing the guy had in the house to watch, he didn't pay for anything, was just, he had a massive collection of VHS tapes of the TV version of The Fugitive.
I
was watching that and I was just looking out the back door and getting totally paranoid that, you know, the Saudis are going to invade and the only light you're going to see in the desert is this house watching The Fugitive. So I was like, no, I got to turn the TV off and start doing something. So I just started writing.
Good move. Look, we're at the end of the first hour, April 12, 2023 edition of Wapito Show. Special guest, Dan Montgomery. Hold tight for hour two. April 12, 2023. It's the second hour of Wap for Pedro Show.
Where you start, there's no turning round. rest of the couch. Jammer ausgestreckt. Deine Zunge benetzt dein Kissen. Ich hab dich geliebt. Ich hab dich geliebt. Auf der Couch, kalt und erstarrt, deine Augen quellen aus dem Kopf. Du bist tot, du bist tot, du bist tot, du bist tot. Mit meinem Messer schneide ich dich in Stücke, mundgerecht. Will ich in mir, ich hab dich geliebt, ich hab dich geliebt. Deine Haut ist straff und kalt. Mit meinem Messer zerschneide ich dich in Stücke, mundgerecht.
Charlie gets loaded, leans back and smiles, pictures the world in his hand. He played with Lester Young, he jammed with Miles, now he plays bass in the state prison band. Their book's pretty square, but what can you do? I mean, it's better than playing alone. Bass needs something there that it can play to, like a stray dog needs a home. And the reason he's here, there on his arm, and I don't mean that bad tattoo. One of a rose and the worst lucky charm, the only love he ever knew. No one understood him like Rose did. She looked like a woman, thought like a kid. Maybe he left the Navy, he could stay one step ahead. Learn to ignore all the pushers and whores, and just play that bass till he bled. Busted for dealing and busted for stealing, it all adds up one day. Standing in court, numb with no feeling, waving 10 years away. And no one understood him like Rose did. She looked like a woman, fought like a kid.
For Pedro Show, start off the second hour. Dan Montgomery with In for a Penny. Sounds like an Annie, people. Alexander Hacka. I think one part's left. This big old epic he's got about this imaginary young man in Berlin. This part's called 10.5 point, and in parentheses, Eisengrau variation. Then we had Mold Omen Al Balmore with Script Lichen. Lichen's trippy. It kind of glows in the dark. It's on bark. I remember once I was in Yosemite tripping balls, seeing that shit, freaking me out. Samuel Locke Ward out of Iowa City with Where's That Doctor? And then Dan Montgomery, Waltz for Charlie. Who's Charlie?
Charlie is, Charlie was a guy named Charlie Leeds. He was a jazz bass player in Atlantic City, played upright bass. They used to do a lot of pickup gigs with, really famous jazz guys. When they come to Atlantic City and need a bass player, he was the guy they would call. And he played with all the big people, like he like Miles and people like that and stuff, just on these pickup gigs. And a friend of mine was in a band with him, a guy who was a bit older than me. He was one of my great mentors in life. And the band they were in was the Trenton State Prison Band.
Okay.
My friend was in there for 12, it was supposed to be 25 years. He got down to 12 for bank robbery and decided since he had the time, he was going to learn to play the clarinet.
Sure.
And they sat him next to Charlie, and they became buddies.
Wow.
And Charlie wrote a really great book called Tilly's Punctured Romance.
Okay.
And a love song of Rotten John Calabrese is the name of the book. Kind of like early or kind of late period, like beat poetry kind of stuff.
Okay. And this cat that you said was your mentor, what's his name?
His name was Joe Gribben, and I have an album that came out a couple of years ago called Smoke and Mirrors, and that's really a concept album about our friendship.
Oh, wow.
Because he was my mentor, but he started out as my meth dealer when I was... you never know who your mentors are going to be, you know? He was a guy that, like, had made every mistake he was going to show me not to make, and it really worked out in my favor.
By being a living example.
Yes, yeah.
Okay. Wow, what a trip. That shows to go, you people. A farmer would tell you, if you want a good crop, use a lot of manure.
Well, you know, Joe Gribben, a really good example. One of his sayings, one day I finally asked him after knowing him for about a year or two, I finally got the nerve up. I said, what made you rob a bank? And he just looked at me and said, if you want a donut, you go to a bakery. I want money.
Okay. So some of these tunes are like true stories.
Oh, yeah. Luckily, a lot of them aren't my true story. But
I'm going to ask you about this next one. It's called Crack Home.
Crack Home, yeah. Luckily not.
Let's play it first, and then you can enlighten the listeners.
Just want another hit. They just see a fun little walked into the room, floating like a balloon. She was high as a moon, shining strange as a tune. Feel Bobby down. Well, she moving slow, and I don't think she knows. And she puts on a show every place that she goes. Feel Bobby down. Tumbling dice, and she fell down twice, but she got up thrice. Now ain't that nice? Beat a Bobby down. I said beat a Bobby down. She swears she's 10 feet tall. And they called out for more, but she wasn't really sure what they wanted her for. Peter Bobby down. Said Peter Bobby down. She swears she's 10 feet tall. Meanwhile, I was still
Show that chunk of music. Star of Dan Montgomery doing crack home. Gonna get enlightened to the. But
that's an unlikely sing along at gigs. People really like.
Okay, we'll get into it. Bulk after that with Feather in Your Cap. David First with something live. This is Hands number 3, 4, 5, and 6. Four parts here, people. And finally, there's I sense a chemical thread winding through this. But Dan Montgomery with Phenol Barbie Doll.
Let's say right about what you know.
As opposed to the truth serum, Phenol Barbital.
Well, it's funny, on the new album, on the Cast Iron Songs album, it's the first time I ever have a record with a love song where there's no, like, get-out clause in the last verse or anything. a drummer's wife, she was like, oh, my God, you bring love songs. And they're not mean.
So, enlighten us to Crack House.
What happened was, and this is a good example of, like, I never really rush writing a song. If a good idea can brew for a while. It was the second, so 20 years ago, it was the second day I was living here in Memphis. And I was walking around downtown. I think it might have been on Beale or South Main or something like that. And this very messed up guy is just walking by me. He's barely standing upright. And he has a white T-shirt on and just scrawled on it with a Sharpie. It says, it's not a crack house, it's a crack home. Get it together. Yeah, I was like, I'll need that someday, you know. And it was obvious like that it would be a funny song because of that title. And then if you listen to the song, it's actually very dark.
Yes, yes.
From a kid's perspective of watching all that.
Sure.
And I did a solo version of it recently at a gig, and a friend of mine who's heard me do it with the band a million times is like, I never realized how dark that was until I just heard it that way. He's like, Jesus.
So, yeah. So, have you noticed that about...
The other thing, too, is at the end, you know, there's that kind of chant at the end where somebody's, there's these people going, you know, it's a fact, everybody wants to know you when you live like that. And that's 2 7-year-old kids.
Did you know them?
Yeah, it was Robert Mache. It was his kid, and our guitar player producer. It was his kids and one of their friends. And it was actually one of the kids' idea. They were trying to explain to us what a mashup was, because that was like a new thing then.
Yeah.
They're saying, like, well, if you put one part of one song with another, and she's like, well, if you put this part of this song at the end of Crack Home, that would be a mashup. I was like, oh, that's a good idea. And it had this kind of Children of the Corn vibe to it, so we just went with it.
Whoa. Yeah, trippy. So... Have you done that a bunch where you do the same song, but instead with the band, Man Alone, and it just has another whole vibe, right?
Yeah, I mean, on my first couple records I'm almost all where I'm just playing acoustic guitar.
Right,
yeah, there's
right.
bands on, but I'm always playing acoustic guitar because I didn't have a steady band at the time, or even if I had a tour, I couldn't afford to have a band. So I wanted to make sure so everything could be stripped down and be just playing on acoustic guitar. And it figured, to me, it's like, yeah, then you always have a song. Otherwise, you have a riff. Now, riff's really good, too. But you want to have a song that can stand up on its own.
So it was practical consideration.
Yes, totally.
Yeah, yeah.
Totally.
And what about Fino Barber Doll?
Fino Barber Doll is really funny because when we were making the Smoke and Mirrors album a couple years ago, and it was really intense work, and it was a real passion project of mine that I'd worked on the writing for a long time, and it was we were very deep in the weeds with it. And I wrote, you know, Barbie Doll, and it had nothing to do with this concept that we were doing. But I was like, one day I was like, let's just do this just to blow the dust off us. And it came out really great. And it sounds like just, you know, very T-Rex kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I have a friend named Palmyra Del Ran, who is a musician from Jersey. She's based in New York for a long time. She had a band called The Frigs that were really, really big on the East Coast.
Yeah.
And she's a DJ on the Underground Garage channel, and they have always turned down my music. Either the Underground Garage station said it was too country, and their country station they have was saying it was too rock. So I sent Fino Barber Doll to Palmyra just because she's the world's biggest T-Rex fan. I thought she'd get a kick out of it. She's like, oh no, they're playing this.
Wow.
And
okay.
And it was just in a, like I said, in the middle of this very heavy record, we built this really fun thing, and it really took off.
Great, great.
It was just, it was like, yeah, with no expectations, it really did the trick. So that might be a lesson there, too.
Yeah, there might be a lesson in that. Just let the freak flag fly and let it carry where it goes.
And that's how my writing ended up being on the new record, kind of, because it's a lot of time constraints with personal things between the pandemic and some stuff here at home. I really didn't have any time to sit and write like I would normally try to.
Yeah.
But I kind of trusted myself to just, you know, play, just, I come up with a chord change or a riff or something and just kind of free associate. And all of a sudden I just have this notebook full of lines and I just start moving them around. That'll work there. So I'm really liking that way of writing rather than trying to really, you know, get in, you know, blood into every line.
Sure. And for the rest of the guys, do you make demos?
Usually just my guitar and vocal on a phone because I have really good players. Like, I'm really lucky that people have. So
no, it's not like you have to write their parts for them. You just show them what you're going to play, and then they find out on their own what they're going to accompany you with. Okay.
And, you know, some bands you're lucky out that way, and some bands you got to really give a roadmap to people.
Totally. I know what you mean. There's all kinds of people that have different ways that way.
Yeah, and I'm really lucky in that my lead guitar player and co-producer is a guy named Robert Mache, and he used to play with, I don't know if it was Steve Wynn from the Dream Syndicate.
Yeah, I know Steve.
When Steve first went solo, his first two solo records, Robert was the lead guitar player in that band.
Okay.
And I used to go see them because I was a huge Steve Wynn fan.
Yeah.
And I always put Robert in, like, my top three guitar players I've ever seen live. And I don't know how many years later, I'm working in a coffee shop in Memphis, and he just walks in, him and his wife, because they washed up there after Katrina because his wife was from there. And
true.
A couple of months later, we started playing together, and, like, you know, he's just an amazing player, and he's just an amazing engineer and, like, mixer and stuff. It's just like...
Oh, you won the lotto.
Yeah, oh, I totally did. I feel guilty because I feel like I actually got something positive out of Katrina.
Yeah, okay.
So I always feel like I need to get
Us here because we're at the end of the second hour, April 12, 2023, edition Watt Peterson, special guest Dan Montgomery. Hold tight for hour three. April 12, 2023, it's the third hour of the Watt for Pedro show.
Sadni si sem, ekut leu. Thank you. Thank you. got free. Since I got clean, I'm hardly ever mean. And I pray to be seen. Since I got clean, since I got clean. Since they taught me how to pray, I hardly miss a day. I don't gotta think about the way they taught me how to pray. Yeah, since I sing the line, I don't gotta figure out from right. I don't hang out.
Pedro Show. Start the third hour off with Dan Montgomery with Lonesome Train. Adele Mead after that was Spolu. Agriculture, How to Keep Cool. 19 minutes and 40 seconds. Is that a band name? Succotort. Electrocarpa. No, Capra Goat, right? Electric Goat. La Stata Tutto l'Anno. Oh, Adam Trumbo with Sunflower. Finally, Dan Montgomery with Straight. Now, what's Straight doing with a tune like Barbie Doll and Crack Home?
Well, if you listen to the last verse, like I said, there's always a get-out clause in my last verse. And because it's the best one I knew that was in rehab, court-ordered rehab, and they just were waiting it out, and because the last line is, I can't wait till I'm not straight. Because it's funny because that somebody that liked that song and misinterpreted it, sent it to somebody, and I got sent an invitation to a gig called Sober Fest, and I was like, I am not. And Robert actually played it years ago. He goes, oh, it's a horrible gig.
Yeah, I can imagine. Look, you were talking about notebooks. Is that part of your songwriting thing? Do you collect lyrics? Because some dudes I know, they write on demand. They won't write until they have to. But you like write whenever you want to, and then you have like kind of a trove that you go to.
Yeah, the way I put it is my writing room is more like a chop shop than a writing room. It's like there's just notebooks everywhere. I don't throw anything away. So if I get really stymied or something, I will pull out a notebook just randomly and see anything triggers something else. And I'll be like, that's a terrible song, but that one line is good. Let's build something from there,
Right, and then it ends up in another piece, right? Okay.
Exactly, yeah.
Right. One part at a time. Johnny Cash has a song where this guy worked ready stealing shit to put together a car.
Oh, one piece at a time.
Yeah, one piece. ADAP kit, right?
There's actually a video for that.
Is there a video part? Okay.
There really is. But so much. He's playing the Johnny Cash shows every time they do that song.
Too. Okay, because you know it's a good kind of life philosophy thing. Where did you do this album?
We did this album as we've done the last three here in Memphis. Our drummer James Cunningham, he has this little back house that was our rehearsal space. He's turned into a really nice studio over the last few. Over about the last 5 or 8 years. And it's really small, but we get really good sound there. But it's funny because we don't like to record with headphones on or anything like that.
Yeah.
So Robert, because it's so small and everything bleeds in, his amp is in the bathroom, right?
Yeah.
So I slightly hear it because the door is slightly cracked open. But when we're recording, I never hear what he's playing until we hear the playback. I'm like, oh, that's amazing. I had no idea.
Oh, wow. Well, you mean as you recorded this, you did a song at a time, so you didn't, like, practice the whole dealio?
Like, this record we really didn't because, like I said, between the pandemic and everybody's scheduling craziness, yeah. There was a health issue here at home that took up a lot of my time. That record was made, the new record was made, all the basic tracks were done in 4 2-hour sessions.
Wow.
Yeah.
So like, you guys did do practice. Part. You did do practice ahead of time. Okay.
I sent him a demo of the song, and we get in there and we do it for 2 hours. And we try to do 2 songs a shot.
Okay.
But like the song, I think you might have played it earlier, In for a Penny.
Yeah.
That is, we got done, I think we had 9 songs done, and we just had a little extra time, and somebody said, do you have anything else? And I didn't, except for I had a chorus, so I was just like, all right, Bo Diddley and F sharp, and that's completely live. Other than the background vocals and the maracas are the only thing that is not live on the floor of the second take.
You know, live first take song that I heard that was done in Memphis. It was Mick Ronson talking about Gene Genie. I think it aired it.
Really?
That's the first fucking. It's not even a run through, right? That's it.
Wow.
David, he said Dave Bowie asked him for something like a Killing Floor, a Howlin' Wolf thing or something.
So he just came out. It's also very similar to I'm a Man, the Yardbirds version.
Absolutely. So, but that's,
and you know he came up playing that already, so it was probably an easy first take for him.
Mick Ronson, not a lot of notes, but man, he had a lot of the good ones.
Yeah, they only got to be the right ones.
I think
one good note over 100, they're just taking up space.
Man, a lot of people are playing lead guitar like that with a lot of notes these days.
Oh, I don't know how many people I've told, like, man, you're not getting paid by the note. Just relax. Take your time.
You know what? That's what I like about the bass, because physics, you do that on the bass, you get smaller and smaller, man. You try to play too many notes?
Very true, yes.
Yeah. Look, you got this tune, Gotta Go. I want to play it.
Cool.
Rock.
Walk for Pedro show, last music for this edition. Start to chunk off with Dan Montgomery doing Gotta Go, then Plus Dog Plus with Thinkers. Alex Paxton after that with Lollipop to Lollipop. Yeah. You know, you can't copyright a song title, people. Now you know why. Dan Montgomery, finally. Rock Hard. I thought that was a good one to go out on. Rock Hard. Fuck yeah, especially for less younger guys. That's a great motto. You know, you get done with a record. Are you already thinking of the next? I know it's like all this work to get a record done, but a lot of times you're ready to go on the next one. Are you feeling like that now, Dan?
I wasn't until about a week ago when I'm starting to write again. So, I'm ready. It's like I'm trying to book some shows for this June tour that we've got some things hanging out, and I should be doing that. And it's like, I want to finish that song.
Now, when does this baby come out? June?
The record?
Yeah.
It's already out now.
It's out now. But you're doing shows to celebrate it, right?
Yep. Doing it. Memphis, we're doing a record release show on May 14th. And then we're doing New York on June 9th at the Parkside Lounge. And in Philadelphia, a place called 118 North on the 11th. And then we're trying to fill in some more around there.
Yeah, I was going to say, any gigs in between? Because that's kind of a hike.
It's tough out there. Booking is harder than it used to be.
Oh, yeah.
Because I wasn't doing anything the last couple of years because nothing was going on. You know?
Yeah, right. And what about internet? Where can people find you on the internet?
DanMontgomeryMusic.com.
Got that, people? DanMontgomeryMusic.com.
Correct. And then, you know, Facebook, just Dan Montgomery. There's a Dan Montgomery Music page on there. Instagram is under Fantastic Yes.
Can I ask you something? This might be totally insane, but there was a guitar man with your same family name out of Indiana named Wes Montgomery.
I wish.
You know, no pick, right? Using his finger, his index finger.
There was a rumor in my family that we were related to Elizabeth Montgomery, but I don't think that's true.
Okay.
But the first time I was in Hollywood, we had a night off. I was touring with the Ben Bon Combo, and we got one of these maps of the stars. It was trash night, so we trash picked Elizabeth Montgomery's house.
Uh-oh. Okay.
That's the closest I have a celebrity relative is that.
And, well, who's that friend, Liz Taylor? Oh, that's Montgomery Cliff.
Yeah.
Wrong name.
Definitely not related, but yeah. Big fan. But not really.
Yeah. Vulnerable man. Vulnerable.
Yes,
vulnerable
yes.
Cat. Yeah. So, and so you're already writing songs and stuff. So what, a notion hits you and that's got to be made into a song. Is it like that?
I want it to be. You know, life doesn't always allow that to be. You know, but I'm one of these people, I used to be a kind of person who went out more. Like, I'm kind of a freak magnet. So if there's 200 people in a bar, the craziest person is going to come up and tell me their crazy story. And I figure that's fair game, you know.
Sure.
So I don't get out enough as much as I used to get those things. So now I'm always like, basically my life is really, you know, if I leave the house, it's eavesdropping and daydreaming. You know, I want to go in a diner, hear a couple about to break up, and then leave before it finishes so I can decide how it ends.
Yeah. And what about guitars? What are you rocking these days?
I am rocking these days a 1959 Dan Electro convertible.
Whoa.
Yeah, I got it during the lockdown. I found it online at that place, Pyramid Guitars. Subway Guitars in San Francisco.
Yep.
And it's definitely not like, you know, a vintage, you know, perfect piece from its day, but it's a great guitar. And then I have this new thing, Robert Mache, my co-producer, and I have been building out of old parts of, it used to be a Coral Firefly that had the wrong neck on it. So we put this thing together. I really like it. We've been calling it the Frankenfly.
Whoa. Corals, yeah, they were kind of a...
It's just about done. It's pretty happening.
I remember the Coral Basses. They were pretty happening.
Anyway,
when you get this new album written, recorded, will you come back on the show? We can play it and you talk about it?
I guarantee it if you'll have me.
The invite's right there, Brother Dan. Please.
It's been a ball. Thank you so much.
Okay. We keep on keeping on.
Dig that. Rock on.
Okay, people. Been April 12, 2023 edition. Wapito should keep your powder dry.